Thank you so much for Ashley from Sierra Nevada for joining us to talk about everything that Sierra Nevada is doing, both in North Carolina and California. You can follow them over at Sierra Nevada on Instagram. And of course, you can find them all over the country in any beer store that you may find craft beer. You can like us on all of our social medias. That's at Better on Draft on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Find out all we were drinking on Untapped by following us, BOD Podcast. You can listen to us live 7 p.m. Eastern. That's BetterOnDraft.tv, Facebook.com/BetterOnDraft, YouTube.com/BetterOnDraft, and Twitch.tv/BOD Podcast. A big thanks to our sponsors, North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan, just south of Baseline Road over on North Center Street, and of course their downtown drinking district location in Northville. You can find Zatuna Liquor in Rochester Hills, just south of M59 on Rochester Road, and of course PCI Brandcraft, that's at PCI Brandcraft on Facebook and Instagram. We will see you in the next one.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Here we go. Welcome, everybody, to episode 264 Better on Draft Podcast. My name is Kent. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. We are a little early today, as you can tell. So if you did not catch this live, we appreciate you listening via the podcast. Of course, you can watch us live normally Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern on BetterOnDraft.tv, Facebook.com/BetterOnDraft, and YouTube.com/BetterOnDraft. All those places you could join and ask questions, just like you can ask questions today. If you are listening live, feel free to put in questions into the chat. But our guest we will introduce in just a moment. I'm going to go around, find out what everybody is drinking, starting with Wendy. What do you got over there?
Well, I'm definitely pulling a Nick today because I could not make a decision for the life of me. I ended up picking up like 7 or 8 different beers to drink today. So I'm starting with the Sierra Nevada Wanderland, which you can only get in the sampler pack. And I'm double fisting with the Dankful IPA as well.
Oh, that's two different Sierra Nevada beers. Let's see if we can keep the trend going. Rob, what are you drinking?
Right now, I'm not drinking because I just got home almost 20 minutes ago. So it is right now sitting on ice. Is I have a Sierra Nevada Barrel Age Narwhal. So let this chill for a quick second, then we'll crack it.
All right. And then we also have Dan. What do you got over there?
You know, I've got my usual. I've got the Stoli in one glass, or in one hand, I should say. And I've got this Big Little Thing IPA, Imperial IPA. We know how much I love IPAs. We'll see how this goes from Sierra Nevada.
You and me both. I actually decided to open up the Hazy Little Thing IPA because usually I'm a little bit better on the hazies itself. But everything we're drinking is obviously Sierra Nevada. So, of course, our guest from Sierra Nevada, Ashley, how you doing today? Why don't you give us a little bit of an introduction and tell us what you do there?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah, name's Ashley, and I work with Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. I'm the communications manager. So I do this kind of stuff all the time. So it's kind of like probably the best job in the world. And yeah, I'm happy to be here.
And what are you drinking right now? You got to be drinking something.
I am. Yeah, I got a Big Little Thing right here.
All right.
Imperial IPA, the 9%. So this is not a beer to mess with if you're not ready for it. But this is such a big, juicy beer, and it's perfect for a Friday night.
Well, let's get into this real quick. Talk to us about the Little Things series, because there's more than just the beers themselves. Why don't you give us a breakdown of everything?
Yeah, so it started out, a couple years ago, we launched Hazy Little Thing, which is the one I think you're drinking. This is an unfiltered IPA, and it kind of just bursts with these, you know, tropical hop flavors, hop notes. You know, there's no fruit in it. It is all just the hops and all the really great aroma. And that unfilteredness really just brings out this nice burst of juiciness in the mouthfeel. Well, anyway, this beer has just been pretty much gangbusters for us, right? It's been doing really well. Last year we launched Wild Little Thing. And this is actually the next iteration. It's in the same family, and you can tell it's got similar branding. And this is a slightly sour ale. And then this year we launched the the Big Little Thing IPA, which is the Imperial IPA. So you can tell the branding's all kind of similar. And the thing that these beers have all in common is that we're really trying to take some of these almost polarizing or kind of hard to approach beer styles. That might be kind of scary to approach for the beer novice or people who maybe are not as familiar with craft beer. We try to take those styles and make it really less complicated and super approachable, right? So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, sours, I don't know. I don't know if that's something that I can really get into. But if you get a chance to try the Wild Little Thing, it's super approachable, really easy drinking. It does not, you know, it doesn't smack you in the face, but it's really delightful, you know? And in terms of, you know, Hazy Little Thing, I've had so many people say, this is like a gateway IPA, right? Like, you know, I don't normally like IPAs. I don't like the bitterness, but then if I can convince them to take a few sips of this, I've gotten so many people that are just like, oh, I didn't realize I like IPAs. Oh my gosh. You know, and oh, I got to call my husband. Now I got to tell him I like IPAs now, or at least I like this one. And then, you know, same kind of thing for Big Little Thing IPA, Imperial IPA for, is doesn't seem like a thing that's for everybody, right? It's a certain, usually a niche group that is really into the Imperial IPAs. And what's really great about this beer and all three of them really is that, you know, beer geeks and beer novices can really find, you know, a really delightful pint in any of these beers, whether you're familiar with craft beer and you're a connoisseur or you're totally unfamiliar and it's brand new to you. There's something kind of for everybody.
Well, let's take it to Dan real quick before we get into more questions, because you're the one drinking the Imperial. I'm drinking the Hazy. I enjoyed the Hazy. It's very, very smooth. It's got that little bit of pininess at the end, which is, you know, typical for an IPA. This is an IPA, not just a pale ale. What do you think of that double?
It's not bad. It's not as harsh as I was expecting. A lot of these bigger IPAs, you know, really have that piney taste that comes from the hops and that really bitter feel to it. This one really doesn't have it. It doesn't drink like a 9%. I actually don't mind this one at all.
It kind of makes me want to revisit just their Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, because that is a beer I probably haven't had in over a decade. It was always way too bitter for me, as you know, and as much as my palate's changed a lot. Sierra Nevada has always just been one of those breweries that just kind of existed, and not in a negative fashion, but in the sense to where we have so much beer out here that we tend to be homers for our own beer. So as a comms director, what is your outreach to these other states? How do you get someone like me who loves craft beer, but as I kind of mentioned to you, I haven't picked up a Sierra Nevada bottle in 7 years. What do I need to do to get reintroduced into Sierra Nevada?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. And honestly, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, it's, I love doing this kind of stuff because we do get to, you know, interact with people, in all different parts of the country, in different ways. And that's really great. But yeah, pale ale, you know, the kind of the OG of craft beer, really kind of set the stage for, launching the craft beer revolution in the United States. You know, Ken Grossman started with pretty much nothing, and he hand built this brewery. And I say hand built, like he found old dairy equipment and welded it and turned that into his brew house. Which, by the way, that brew house still exists, and it's actually mounted on the back of a trailer, and we use it to go do some, you know, kind of cool, like activations and things like that. But at any rate, yeah, pale ale really, you know, kind of helped pave the way. So it is one of those things that I think sometimes people forget, because there's so many things out there. There's so many things to explore, so many different types of craft beer and, you know, new styles that are emerging every year, every few years, you know, so I get it. There's a lot to explore. But what's really nice about, the Sierra Nevada pale ale is that it's you know, it's kind of this, the old trusty, you know, it's going to be consistent. If you see it on the shelf, you know what you're going to get, and you know, it's going to be good, right? It's that balance between hop and maltiness. And it's just so nice. I mean, it's the quintessential version of the American pale ale, you know, it kind of sets the stage for that version. And I would even say too, you know, I've worked some beer fests and, or, you know, communicated with brewers from other breweries. And I've heard so consistently that like, this beer is what's in the fridge of so many brewers of other breweries, right? And then also sometimes at beer fest, I see people that are like, oh, I gotta cleanse my palate. And they drink a Sierra Nevada pale ale because it just kind of equalizes things out, right? So yeah, it is just kind of that's that old trusty go-to. And I would encourage people, if you haven't tried this beer in a while, go back to it and just like kind of, you know, reintroduce yourself to it, because it is such a good beer. And you know, yeah, it's just, you got to kind of pay it. You got to pay respect, right, to this beer that really helped launch the craft beer revolution in the United States.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. So I'm drinking the Dankful IPA, and I have to admit, I was a little bit worried because of the name that I was going to be too put off by it because of the hops, but it is very well balanced and it's really got a good flavor to it. I really do enjoy it. But I wanted to ask about the Dankful project because Sierra Nevada committed to donating at least $1 million in 1 year, starting in August of 2020, to nonprofits committed to making an impact during the COVID-19 pandemic. So I wanted to know how that project came to fruition and if you could tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So it kind of goes way back. Sierra Nevada has been in the family that owns the brewery. So it's also worth mentioning, Sierra Nevada is still 100% family owned and operated. And we say family owned, operated, and argued over, but it, you know, it's kind of true though. But yeah, so the family, the Grossman family, has always been very philanthropic, and you know, it's not something that was ever necessarily talked about because it's just kind of the right thing to do. And they're just good people. So over the years, in various ways, they would donate to different philanthropic things. You may recall several years ago, there was the largest wildfire in California history was the Camp Fire, and it actually erupted pretty close to our Northern California flagship brewery, which is in Chico, California. Paradise, the town of Paradise, is just up the road from Chico. In fact, a lot of our employees were impacted by this, and it impacted just the community around the brewery so much. The Grossman family just jumped in and did so much. I mean, probably more things in that community than I would ever even know about. But part of their way of addressing it was coming up with the resilience beer. You may remember seeing this beer, and it was a really cool thing because Ken basically just put out a call to, like, hey, any breweries that would want to help us with this, if you make this beer and sell it in your tap room, and then whatever proceeds you get from that beer sales, if you would donate it back to this resilience fund to help this whole community, you know, kind of be revitalized. And, you know, honestly, kind of thought it would be, you know, there'd be some folks that would jump on board, but it ended up being like so many. It ended up being this like massive project, and it was so heartening to see how everybody kind of came together in the craft beer community to help with this. So that whole idea with a resilience beer kind of set the stage for us when we're thinking like, okay, we want to formalize some of our philanthropic stuff. And let's tie a beer to it. That's kind of nice. You know, at least to bring awareness to some of these things. So Dankful IPA was where we landed at. You know, of course the pandemic, had hit. And, one of the things that we identified that we could really try to impact was food insecurity. So, as part of the launch of the Dankful beer, it was like, okay, we're going to donate, $1 million over the course of a year to different nonprofits that are, addressing, things like food insecurity. So the first round, we donated to World Central Kitchen, which was really, they were a really great nonprofit partner. And then the two subsequent rounds after that, we worked with local, like urban farms and community gardens. There was even like a city orchard kind of project in there. But essentially working to address food insecurity, by helping, with access to fresh local produce and food. And that's been a really, just such a cool project, see, you know, kind of come to life in these different communities across the country. And then actually, we still have another round that would occur later this year, and we haven't landed exactly on where we're, what we're doing with that just yet, but stay tuned. And folks can actually look on our website at the Sierra Nevada .com/Dankful. And there's all kinds of information about all the different nonprofits that we've worked with. And then when we will update that whenever we get to the next round.
So obviously, these projects are not your first foray into philanthropy. They kind of touched on it a little bit earlier with the Little Things series. And I opened up my Wild Things just so that we could talk about all of them since we're doing it. It is a slightly sour ale with guava, hibiscus and strawberry, and it is delightful.
Right.
I could drink this all day on the lake. I'm just saying. But my question is, so earlier this month, you announced the Doing Big Things, which is a music benefit series in a partnership with the Collide Agency. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and what that's doing?
Yeah. So this is a really cool project that I'm really excited about. So essentially, we were able to find and partner with some different artists, musical artists across the country and in select cities. And we worked really hard to not just find musical artists that are cool and make really great music, but went a little step further and wanted to pick artists that are also working to do things in their community with the whole idea that little things can really make a big difference. So we've got a series of live stream shows that these artists are going to perform, and it'll be on our Instagram Live. The schedule is actually up on the website. The website is doingbigthings.beer. It's not .com, it's .beer. And you can find all the different schedules there, learn about the artist, you know, get links to their pages and hear their music. And then on top of that, also... They talk about the nonprofit that they wanted to highlight through this project and the different kinds of things that they know in their community. And then we also have a local illustrator that has made a custom poster to kind of go along with each show and each artist. And again, just kind of trying to tie in some different things. There's some different elements of the local community and highlight artists and musicians and nonprofits and local communities.
So I did take the chance to look because I spent a lot of time reading about this program because I'm a huge music lover, so I absolutely love it. The next installment of the series is actually on July 26th, and the artist is Mobley, and their live stream performance is followed, I think it's the 29th. I think it's like 3 days later. How is it that they can get to that?
It'll be on our Instagram. On Instagram, so Sierra Nevada Instagram page on Instagram Live.
And I saw that Nick joined us, so I wanted to bring him in and see if he has anything he wants to ask you.
Well, before I do that, I wanted to share what I was drinking, and I too am drinking the Wild Little Thing, and I agree, I could drink this all day. When I went to the store, I have a lot of IPAs in the fridge right now, and I don't think I can have any more, I can fit any more, so went with the sour route, and I'm really really, really glad I did. There was one question in the chat that one of our listeners is listening or wanted to ask. And Richard wants to know, is there any chance for Summerfest and Keller Weiss to see national distribution again? He says they are very, very beautiful beers.
Yeah, so funny. I was just at the brewery here in North Carolina today and talking to somebody about both of those beers, actually. And I agree. So Keller Weiss is just such a beautiful example of that Bavarian style wheat. You know, we brewed it the traditional way in open fermenters. We've got two open fermenters that we, you know, built into the facility in North Carolina, you know, just specifically for that beer and a couple other beers that we make as well. But and then in Summerfest, yeah, of course, that was that had been our summer seasonal for quite some time. And then this year we switched it up and changed it over to Summer Break, which is a session hazy IPA. It was also a pretty good beer. But certainly that the Summerfest, the Czech style Pilsner is just, you know, there's just nothing like it. Right. So there's certainly those diehard fans. I'm one of them. And I also am one of a fan of Keller Weiss as well. So here's the skinny on it. You can get Keller Weiss on tap at either of our tap rooms. And I know that's not relevant to your geography where you're at. But if you find yourself in Northern California or outside of Asheville, North Carolina, I invite you to check that out. We can also check out our e-commerce site and where we can deliver and when things are available. It's always changing the lineup on our e-commerce site, and we're always looking to expand it. So what may not be there right now might change in the coming weeks and coming months. So definitely check out sierranevada.com in the shop there and see what's on our e-commerce site. And then same for Summerfest. Of course, that is a seasonal beer, so it wouldn't be something that we would put out on e-commerce all year. But we did actually do a small limited run that we put out on e-commerce and sold in our out of our gift shops. Actually, I guess it was last month. And yeah, it sold out in like a day. I didn't even get any. And I live, you know, pretty close to the brewery here in North Carolina, and I couldn't get there fast enough to get it. So I understand the dilemma.
So one quick follow-up. You had mentioned the e-commerce site you deliver. How many states do you guys deliver to, or are you able to deliver to? I'm sure every state's got their own unique rules, their laws. How many are you guys able to deliver to right now?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. And I actually don't know the exact answer on how many it is. But yeah, it is up to the individual states and kind of what their laws are. So we do as many as we possibly can. And also, you know, kind of a thing that's happening right now that we're seeing is there's definitely legislation that's being looked at in various states too. So we might even see more states come on board, you know, throughout the rest of the year and going into next year. And we certainly hope that because, you know, more people to the beer. I mean, yeah, more beer to the people.
Yep. I brought up your e-commerce site real quick, and to give you the answer, the answer is 7. California, okay. North Carolina, and then really somewhat random, North Dakota, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Virginia, Vermont. So those places, you can get SierraNevada.com. You can go online and buy. I did see you had some Olivia's for sale on the site, and now I'm really sad that I can't get it, but maybe I can ship it for when I'm going to be in Vermont here in a few days or in a month or so, just ship it to my hotel there and just have them hold on to it till I show up. But I want to pass it to Dan because I think Dan's got a question for you.
I actually have a couple, and I'm glad we were talking about these beers that people are looking for. So, you know, I used to love Sierra Nevada before I became a big stout drinker. It really was one of my go-tos. One thing I noticed you don't make anymore is a Southern Hemisphere Harvest. Is there any plans on ever bringing that back? Because that seemed to be one of your most popular beers that came out every year.
Yeah, you know, we're always looking for, you know, different things to bring back and bring back into the rotation. And certainly, you know, again, it's kind of our e-commerce. We have a guy, Terrence, you might have heard his voice on our NPR commercials. He's a good fella, and he actually does a lot of our kind of small package run stuff that shows up on e-commerce. And, you know, that's some kind of stuff that he is working on is looking at, you know, what we can do in that space. So, yeah, I would say I don't have an exact answer for you, except that we are always looking at doing things and bringing things back in the rotation or trying something new. So.
Awesome. Now, one other question I do have, too, because we're talking about, you know, I used to be a fan. It seems like maybe more places just don't pick it up. Some of your darker beers, like your stouts, you do see the narwhal out there, but things like Bigfoot, do you see not as much popularity with your darker beers as opposed to your pales and your IPAs?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And I think by and large right now in the craft beer industry, the segments that are just surging right now, it's certainly the IPAs, you know? So, and that's something that Sierra Nevada has always done and always done really well is really lean into the hops. That's put us on the map with pale ale, you know? So, you know, that's certainly something that we play well in, but it's not to say that there isn't a really great consumer base and fan base for the darker beers that we have. But we really, you know, when we look at like retail and our partnerships at retail and things like that, there's only so much shelf space. So we really got to look at like, okay, what are our, you know, the majority of our consumers really looking for? And right now they're looking for those IPAs that we make. So, you know, as things evolve and change, I mean, we've been around for over 40 years, you know, we've seen things evolve and change, and they're going to continue to evolve and change. So there is certainly going to be space for us to have a little something for everybody.
Awesome. One more question that I do have here, and I didn't write this, but this is kind of interesting, so I got to take it. So hard kombucha, is it the new seltzer?
Strange beast, baby. Yeah. I'm glad actually somebody brought this up, because if you guys didn't, I was going to. Is it the new hard seltzer? I don't think so. I think, you know, nothing against hard seltzer, because I think what's really interesting these days, right, is that there is kind of something out there for everybody, right? Every kind of palate. And, you know, as we age, there's younger folks that are coming of drinking age, right? And they're going to have maybe different palates and different things like that. So it's really interesting to kind of see what's going on. But when we were looking at hard kombucha, this really kind of came about because Ken Grossman, he's just a fanatic about fermentation, and he has been since he was, you know, really young, probably too young to be thinking about it, right? But he just been a fanatic about fermentation and has experimented with all kinds of stuff over the years, you know, wine, he made sake, I mean, done all kind of stuff. And so when we were looking at, you know, kind of expanding to some other things and really just exploring different things, he was really interested in exploring hard kombucha. So I'll just give you a quick rundown on it. The name Strange Beast, you can see it's spelled wrong, right? Like it's a strain. And that's a nod to the SCOBY that you use to brew kombucha, which SCOBY stands for a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast. So it's basically the fermentation agent. And then they called it a strange beast because they were looking into doing a hard kombucha, and they have to create like a kombuchery, right? It's a totally different process than brewing beer. So they had to like build a new facility area at the brewery to experiment with this. And the brewers were kind of like, oh, this is such a beast of a project. So then it was kind of like, oh, well, there we go. There's our name. And then we passed that name off to the graphics department, our in-house graphics department. And then they were like, oh, we can have fun with this. So they started making all these like kind of crazy beasts, you know, out of the, you know, the visual of the different ingredients. So this one's got lemon, ginger, and hibiscus. You can kind of see it's a beast made out of lemon, ginger, and hibiscus. There's six flavors. Four of them are 7% alcohol. And two of them that we just launched this year are actually 100 calories and 4% alcohol. And they're all flavors that are, they're all natural, they're all organic, they're all, you know, all the really good stuff. They're kind of inspired by like cocktails is what the brewers, we just kind of told them, you know, hey, go have fun, like come up with some like fun, different flavor profiles that you don't see out there. You know, we want it to be something that's really unique and interesting. Long story, that was a long answer to the question. No, I don't think it's the next hard seltzer, but it's certainly going to be a category to watch because there's some new players in it.
I want to take two follow-up. Go on, Wendy.
Go ahead. I was going to say, before we move on to the next question, I actually wrote that question and I need to know about the Master of Strange series and how I can find it.
Yes.
I need to be a part of it.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Master of Strange. It hasn't launched just yet, but it is a project that I'm working on. So I do know quite a bit about it, but we're going to be launching a series, you know, coming up soon, in which we're basically providing kind of a masterclass to consumers. It'll be on our Instagram, and you'll learn how to do some cool things, like maybe make some cool dishes with using Strange Beast hard kombucha. We've got one, where we've got some, carnivorous plants and learning how to care for carnivorous plants like Venus flytraps. Nice. It's really cool. We've got some really cool content. We're only a little bit into it, so I don't have a ton to share about it right now, but I do believe if you keep an eye on our Instagram and social media, Facebook, you'll probably learn a little bit more about it within like 2 or 3 weeks.
Awesome. Sorry, Ken, go ahead.
No, that's actually one of the questions was, you know, how are we going to be able, to seed this hard kombucha in distribution and where is it going to be? But the second question I have to ask, just because it's a bingo square on this show, you said 100 calories for one of the hard kombuchas at 4%. What is the carb loadout for that kombucha beer?
Oh, you know what? Well, I don't have it right in front of me, but I do have one right there in that fridge, and I can pop over there and get it if you want me to look.
I think we can get it after the show when we take our break, and you can give me that answer. But I'm always curious because I'm always looking for these lower carb beers, and Flying Embers, who is another hard kombucha maker, has been making some low carb beers. They have their Lion's Maid, which I found really good, and then the Rishi Stout, which was a mushroom stout, and that's just not for me. Maybe for others, not for me. But Dan, I'm going to buy you some. I'm going to find it. I'm just going to buy you some so you can try it.
Nope.
I want to get into a little bit about the expansion from Sierra Nevada to Asheville, because you actually joined the company after the expansion to Asheville. So you kind of showed up after. But I have had the opportunity to actually do one drunken stumble through the city of Asheville. So I only got to hit a handful. But what's the relationship with Sierra Nevada, Asheville, and the city of Asheville? Because I know you guys are not in city proper, but obviously when people say, you know, North Carolina for Sierra Nevada, they say Asheville. What do you guys have any rapport with them? Do you work with them? Are you just kind of off to the side, you and like New Belgium, like, we don't want to touch the big dogs over here?
No, that's a really good question. So we say it's kind of the Asheville greater area. Our brewery is actually located right next to the Asheville airport. So it is really totally accessible. And living here, I actually don't live in the city of Asheville either. I live in another small town, but I can tell you, within like an hour radius of Asheville, it is kind of a place where everybody kind of knows everybody. There's still definitely tons of connections. It still feels like a really small town, you know, in such a large geography. But, you know, in terms of, you know, Sierra Nevada being in Asheville, we've worked really hard to be really good neighbors. And one way that we do that, when we very first opened up, made a commitment to all the small breweries in the area, as long as you're in the Brewers Association in the area, you are invited to come to our lab and use our state-of-the-art laboratory to test your beers and make sure your stuff's all in line the way you want it to be. Because, you know, that kind of equipment and that kind of technology is not cheap, and it's not accessible for some of these small breweries that are just getting started, you know, some of the small brew pubs. And that's just part of our commitment to being good neighbors. And, you know, it's also just notable. That's something I really, really like about this industry. You know, while we're competitors with all these other craft breweries or just brewers in general, generally speaking, we play really nice with each other. You know, kind of a nod back to that, what I was talking about, the resilience beer, you know, where all these breweries kind of came together and helped us. You know, in that same token, we, of course, are competitors, but we help each other because, you know, a high tide, you know, all ships rise in high tide. So.
Well, you mentioned, and you guys actually, there's a really, the White Labs is over there too. So you have, you know, the yeast, because they have a lab there. It's not just a brewery named after the lab. They do all their yeast stuff. Do you work with them at all? Or is that part of like the collaboration that you guys have over in Asheville?
We have done some small batch kind of stuff. And there's also like a small local maltster called Riverbend. And we have, you know, we do some pilot experimentation kind of stuff. We do have a pilot brewery on site at the Mills River location in North Carolina. So, yeah, whenever we can use local ingredients, it's always really cool to try to come up with some different stuff.
All right. I'm going to actually pass it over to Rob, because I know Rob's got a question for you.
Come on, go here. All right. So I actually got a couple that I want to go through. First one, obviously, as we've already been talking, that Sierra Nevada has been in the craft beer industry for a long time. I believe it's just over 40 years, which, you know, is pretty impressive considering having gone through from the start to the craft beer boom and seeing breweries that are lucky enough to even make it to their 5-year anniversary. What would you say is what keeps Sierra Nevada relevant in this crazy time of almost having 9,000 breweries and makes Sierra Nevada appealing to so many beer enthusiasts throughout the world?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And honestly, the first thing that really comes to my mind is just the, you know, the culture at Sierra Nevada is really, it starts from the top, right? And our leader, Ken Grossman, really kind of helped set this culture of, you know, being curious and, you know, kind of constantly not resting on your laurels and really, you know, thinking about like, okay, what can we do better? What can we do next? What can we, what are we curious about and how can we become masters at that thing? You know, and that is really driven into our culture. And I think that that's what's really kind of gotten us to the point where we have, you know, Strange Beast hard kombucha. We've got, you know, things like a slightly sour ale. You know, we've got this whole line the little things categories that are such a departure, you know, from what people might think of when they think of Sierra Nevada. They most likely think of the green can, but then there's so many other things there, you know. So I think that's really kind of part of what's keeping the company, you know, relevant and moving forward and evolving. But you know, I think there's also some other things at play. So, you know, two of Ken's kids, Sierra, his daughter, go figure, her name is Sierra, like Sierra Nevada, and his son, they are, you know, they work at the brewery and they're helping to run the company. And, you know, that's also really kind of keeping, you know, things kind of coming into that next generation. And, you know, so there's a sense of longevity there, you know, and there's certainly an eye towards, you know, the way into the future. So always thinking about what could be, you know, new and next and how can we be relevant in the industry.
Right. And I will say for one thing, which, it definitely for me personally was making you guys definitely relevant, in that when I went to the websites to find out where I could find the beer, I put in my location, clicked on a store, and it showed me what was delivered in the last 4 days to that store. And I've never seen any brewery that does distro that had something like that. Because when I brought it up, I was like, oh, they have Narwhal. So I'm going to go there and I'm going to go get Narwhal.
Nice.
So that was really cool, and just to see that on a site. Other thing I had, according to the report from the Brewers Association, you guys are the third highest producing craft brewery in the country. Although the numbers were a little skewed a bit because the 2020 report did not have Yingling at the top, which I thought they were to the top, but I guess they didn't report their numbers. So I can just only assume, based on, you know, 2019 and before, that, you know, they still hold that spot. But Yingling and Boston Beer Co. being ahead of Sierra Nevada, I think the difference between you and Boston Beer was about 600,000 barrels, I believe. What I'm curious of is that, you know, there's some breweries that always love that idea of being number one. Is that thought, you know, something, a thought that's there with Sierra Nevada, or is it just kind of just, you know, we're good where we are. We're good where we're putting out our beer. If we get there, we get there.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I don't know that is something that is on everybody's mind to be, you know, number one on that particular ranking. You know, cause we've got a lot of number ones that we can point to, like, you know, Hazy Little Thing, number one IPA, you know, Wild Little Thing, fastest growing, you know, in the sour segment, nationally distributed. You know, we've got some things. This is also, I think, this has got some kind of accolade, I think, maybe, you know, for its being its first this year, you know, in its segment. And I don't want to overquote it, but, you know, we've got a lot of things that we can really point to as our successes. But really, at the end of the day, you know, what really matters is where we are internally, right? And taking care of our people, taking care of our consumers, and doing what we love. And I think that's really the driving force, more than trying to achieve some kind of a trophy.
Gotcha. And before we got on, I said I was drinking the Barrel Aged Narwhal. You said that you had a hand in this. What's the story behind this beer with you?
Yeah, so that's a really, really good beer. So Narwhal in itself is its own beer, right? It's part of our high altitude series every year, and it, you know, delicious in its own right. Now we've then put that into bourbon barrels and we age it. And that's the beer that it would sometimes be served in the tap room or something like that. Or there was a couple of times, I think, that it was bottled in like a cork and cage. And a few years ago, I was working on a project in Louisville, Kentucky at a music festival there. And one of the sales guy that I was working with said, you know, hey, you know, my area would just do so well if we could have, you know, this bourbon barrel aged Narwhal. You know, if we could package it and just sell it and kind of limited run in my area, I think it'd be really great. And so we kind of took that back to the brewery and we did a lot of, you know, kind of scratching our head, like, okay, what should we do? And then it was like, let's just put this out across the country. Like, why not? And then it was kind of fun because it was like, well, you know, should it go into a glass? I mean, into a glass bottle, or should, you know, what, how should we package this? And, you know, almost immediately I was just like, we got to put this thing in a can, you know, because it's different. It's going to jump off the shelf. You know, you look at the competitors in that kind of segment. And they're mostly, at least at the time, they were mostly in glass bottles. Right. So I just thought it was so cool to have some kind of point of distinction and really jump off the shelf. And then beyond that, it was also like, let's make it a matte black can, you know, because it's just cool. And I was absolutely delighted to see that, you know, a couple months later they get the can in and it's matte black, and I'm like, oh, hey, that's awesome. So yeah, I mean, where I didn't brew the beer, I didn't develop the beer. I don't want to take any kind of claim to that, but it was a really fun project to kind of, you know, just see the process of like, hey, when you work at a place like Sierra Nevada, it's a family owned company. And if you have a good idea, you can raise your hand and speak up, and it just might come to fruition. You know, and you just don't, you can't get that in every kind of industry, and you can't get that in every kind of place. Right. So it's a cool, unique thing to be able to have that with a family owned company.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is definitely tasty. The, for me, I'm a little bit of a bourbon freak. So I just basically just want more bourbon flavored as to come off of this, but that's just me being picky. But I'm going to hand it off to Wendy here. She's got another question for us.
I do. So I had the opportunity a couple years ago to visit Alaskan Brewing, and I got to see firsthand what beer-powered beer means. And I was really impressed with their spent grain boiler, the CO2 recovery system, and their mash filter press. That they were using to reduce waste and energy. And then I started watching videos about Sierra Nevada. And you guys are not playing around when it comes to sustainability. So from your solar array panels to the wastewater treatment facilities, I'm just wondering what kind of sustainability efforts are you using? And if you could tell us why it's important to the culture of Sierra Nevada.
Oh man, I don't know if we've got enough time in the rest of this podcast, because I could talk all day about the sustainability stuff. So for starters, our brewery in North Carolina is a platinum LEED certified facility, which is just incredible for a production brewery. You know, so the process of making and distributing beer is, it uses a lot of resources, right? It is not the smallest carbon footprint kind of operation. And so from very early on, it was just kind of part of the thinking of the Grossman family and the brewery that, it's the right thing to do to, you know, kind of compensate for the resources that we're using and to try to be as responsible about it as we can. And it's not something that we've shouted from the rooftops, because frankly, it really is just the right thing to do, which is another kind of nuanced part of the culture that I also really just appreciate. So if you visit our breweries, either one of them, there's so many things that you would see or not even see and not have any, you wouldn't know about different, you know, waste recovery efforts and things like that. So out in Chico, we have this like just huge solar array on top of the brewery. And if it needed to be, it could actually be off the grid electrically if it needed to be. In North Carolina, we don't have as many solar panels just because it's not as sunny there, but we do a whole host of other things. So, you know, one thing is the whole parking lot has actually got permeable pavers. So it's a water catchment system. So it catches rainwater and stores that. And then we can use that to like flush toilets and do some different things like that. So, you know, just some kind of small recovery efforts. And then even down to little things like we recapture CO2 and then use that to kind of push beer through the lines in the tap room so that we're not having to go out and like, you know, purchase CO2 where we're using that resource. You know, we capture as much steam when you're brewing the beer, you get a lot of steam coming off the kettle. We capture as much as we can and store that so that it can be used to heat water on another end. And then so it's, you know, trying to be as full circle as possible. And then, you know, we other efforts at the brewery, it is absolutely in our culture to, you know, to compost and recycle, because actually we are considered a zero waste facility. And it's like, you know, somewhere it's like 99.9 7 or 99.8, something like that, percent of waste is diverted from the landfill. And it's a real thing. I mean, you go, if you go and you're in our offices or something like that, I mean, everybody's got their reusable water bottles and things, because you can't find disposable stuff like that. It just doesn't exist on the inside. And then, you know, every room has a facility for composting and recycling. And the brewery provides educational resources to all employees on how they can live a more sustainable life in their personal life. You know, so there's so many things I couldn't even, you know, finish telling you. But it is absolutely ingrained into the culture, because it is just the right thing to do.
All right. Well, I know you said you could probably talk for that for hours, but we don't have the time. We're actually running up. We usually stop at about 45 minutes so that we can all ask a final question in case that takes a little bit of longer time. So with that in mind, we're going to go around. Everyone's going to ask a final question, and then we will bid you adieu. So I'm going to start with Dan in case he has to run out early. Dan, what's your question?
All right. So if I had to pick any Sierra Nevada beers to do this, which two should I pick to play a game of Edward 40 Hands?
Oh, gosh.
leave it to Daniel to ask one of those kind of questions.
Yep.
Why don't we, you know, never mind the 40 Hands. Why don't we just have a wizard staff party while we're talking?
Nice. Well, I think definitely pale ale, because again, if you haven't had this beer in a while, go back and try it. And I think you're going to be really blown away with like the actual complexity of this beer, and, you know, how it's just been a mainstay. And then, you know, honestly, my next favorite is Hazy Little Thing. I know, but that might get you in a little trouble at 6.7%. But
I tell you what, I'm going to take you up on that. I'm going to go buy pale ale and I'm going to try it on the show next week. And then I will video, well, obviously, because we're doing the pod, the live reaction. And I'm just going to send it to you. I'm just going to be like, here you go. This is what Ken says. And be in mind that it's going to be probably like whatever I say doesn't even matter. Like, I am not the greatest. If you gave me like an English brown or amber or an alt beer, like, an Oktoberfest, like, I can judge it pretty well. But the second you give me an IPA, I'm just going to be like, or a pale ale even, I'm just going to be like, no, no, thank you. Just move along. But Rob, what question do you have?
I'm actually going to go into the chat. And as Richard Katona has been throwing a couple that are in there, definitely looking for some other beers, looking for the Glissade Golden Bock and or the Ruthless Rye. And was also wondering if there were any insights on this year's Oktoberfest offering and whether or not there was a collaboration as done previously.
Yeah, I'll start with the Oktoberfest. We have in the past done collaborations with German breweries. Obviously, in the last couple of years, you know, COVID has been quite a damper on that. So this year we don't have a collaborator, but I actually just got my hands on it. It ships on Monday, so you'll start seeing it hit shelves in the next couple of weeks. And that's really just in conjunction with retail stores doing their fall resets, right? I know people are like, oh, it's so early for Oktoberfest, but that is just kind of a common thing, and we're beholden to the retailers. But it's a delicious amber Marzen, a very awesome traditional example of an amber Marzen. So definitely pick that up this year. I highly recommend it. And then the other question was?
The Glissade Golden Bock.
Yeah, Glissade was a beer that we brewed a while back. I don't know if that one's going to make any kind of a revival anytime soon. And then the Ruthless Rye, I would say keep your eyes peeled, because there has been a lot of people asking for that one. So, you know, you never know.
Yeah. And I guess if people are worried about or annoyed that Oktoberfest comes out this early, clearly don't shop at Costco, because they're probably going to have Halloween costumes out there tomorrow.
For real, it always comes out around this time of year. You start seeing those beers.
Yeah, all those pumpkin beers, right, Dan?
No. Well, let's skip that. We don't have to have that one out this
Dan,
early.
Dan, I'm going to send you that Shipyard Pumpkin Seltzer that's coming out here.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Send it to him.
Wendy.
He'll probably like it.
Wendy, what's your final question?
So my question for Ashley is, what is the thing that you love most about working for Sierra Nevada?
You know, it's the culture. It's what kind of keeps coming back. I was at the brewery today and I was doing like a photo shoot, some beer and food. And I was just like, man, I'm so lucky and thankful to work here. It's just amazing. You know, cause it's not just a job. It's definitely, you know, it's family, it's friends, it's, and the company is really concerned with our well-being and our holistic well-being and not just, you know, pumping output out of us. It's just a really great company.
Fantastic.
Nicholas.
All right. My go-to, your guilty pleasure beer that is not Sierra Nevada. Or any other brand that's tied back to Sierra Nevada. What is it?
Oh, you know, I don't hate having a Miller High Life sometimes. You know, it's the champagne of beers. I'll say that. But, you know, honestly, I live in Asheville. There's so many really great local breweries that I really do like to hit up. You know, shout out to like Burial or... you know, there's some small ones like Turgwa and Whistle Hop and Zillicoa. There's some really great ones locally. So I love to just kind of explore.
Right on. Look, Miller High Life can't go wrong.
No. I mean, I'm surprised, you know, the local breweries like Wicked Weed local and New Belgium local, and we're making really bad jokes here, but as long as you enjoy it, that's what we care about. Actually, Burial is where I had one of my favorite beers down there because I got the Skillet, which is the donut beer.
Yes.
That was early in my stumble. I actually had a chance. The representative for Guinness was in town. He, you know, from the Baltimore brewery, was in Asheville doing R&D. And what I missed so much, and I'm so excited that we're going to slowly start getting back during the, you know, post-COVID days, when you could belly up to the bar and just talk to the random person next to you. Because I was by myself solo in Asheville. The guy next to me just happened to be the R&D director for Guinness in Baltimore. And I had got so many free beers that night. It ended at Wicked Weed, which I was so sad because they had my favorite style of beer and they had three different versions of it. Because nobody carries an alt beer and this place had three. And I was just so sad because I was so drunk. But my final question to you is I want to bring it back because, again, you're from the Asheville area. You guys are representing Asheville beer. I fly into Asheville, the airport, which I have before, a really small airport, to say the least. I leave, I go, I do a tour at Sierra Nevada. I'm heading into town. What is the first brewery stop I must make?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I don't know that I could even just tell you just one. But I'll mention one I didn't mention earlier, which is Hillman. I think they do fantastic beers. So Hillman, Burial, Zillicoa. There's this a whole slew of really excellent breweries. Oh, Fonta Flora. I know it's not exactly in the Asheville area, but it's in the general area, and Fonta Flora is doing some fantastic stuff as well. There's just so many, too many to count.
Exactly. What's great about Asheville is that a lot of the breweries are, most of the breweries for that matter, are walking distance, where you can, if you're staying the night, you can Uber into town and Uber out and not have to Uber in between sites. And you could probably do that two or three times before you hit every single one in the first place. So I appreciate you joining us on the show, giving us a lot of information on Sierra Nevada history, the present and the future. They can find Instagram at Sierra Nevada. Anything you want to promote before we end the show?
No, pale ale. Go try a pale ale. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed.
I promise. I'm drinking the Imperial now, and I am getting so much grapefruit on the back end that I do not taste any bitterness, any pininess, and it's almost gone, which you might hear in my voice as I start to slur words for the next segment. But that's going to do it. Better on Draft 264. You can find us on all of our social medias, Better on Draft on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Of course, you can watch us live, guys, if you're listening on the pod. I appreciate it. Subscribe on iTunes, leave us a review. But if you're not, and you want, or if you are and you want to go check us out on the video, youtube.com/betteronDraft, subscribe, hit the bell, facebook.com/betteronDraft, give us a like, or twitch.tv, give us a follow. That's BOD Podcast, BODPODCAST. Find out all we drank on Untapped BOD Podcast, and no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's Better on Draft. Have a good night.
Peace.